Accession number 20496, Reel 1.
Edwin Drew, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Parkston, in Dorset.
Which year was this?
1917.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Parkston?
No, I left Parkston when I was 3 and a half, and I moved on then to New Malden in Surrey, in the close to London. And I then lived in the area for the next 25 years. And when I moved across to Hertfordshire to build the Stevenage New Town as an engineer.
Where did you go to school?
I was at school at Farnham Grammar School in Surrey.
How old were you when you finished there?
I was 16.
So that was in 33?
I beg your pardon?
That was in 1933 that you left?
1933, yes.
Did you then get a job?
No, I went straight to university.
Which one?
University College London.
To do an engineering degree?
To do a civil engineering degree, yes.
So you finished there in 36?
I finished in 36. Before I was 19, I got a degree with first class honours.
And then?
I then took a job with Surrey County Council in the Highways and Bridges Department, and until the war, and I was called up in September 1939, having previously, in October 1937, joined the Royal Naval Volunteer Reserve London Division in October 1937.
Why did you decide to join the RNVR?
My brother was in the merchant service, and from a very early age I wanted to be in the Navy if there was trouble, and I could see no easier way of ensuring that than by joining the RNVR.
Why did you want to be in the Navy if there was trouble?
Well, I felt that I would have taken the sea as a career if my eyesight had been good, and because that was not possible, I then decided that RNVR was the most suitable service, volunteer service, to suit my requirements when the call came at that time before the war.
Had you anticipated a war?
Until 6 or 9 months before September 1939, I was convinced there would be no war.
What convinced you that? What changed your mind?
Well, the general deterioration of the political scene and the complete absence of any sense of statesmanship on the part of Hitler.
Did you get much training in RNVR pre-war?
I had a year with the RNVR, and that was twice weekly, 2 hours each time, aboard the President and as an ordinary signalman. The President I think it was about 1936, had specialised in communications, both signalman and wireless telegraphy, and it wasn't until 1938 that they went on to gunnery.
Did you hear Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did.
Under what circumstances?
I was still living at home, And the Sunday morning, I sat down with my parents and we listened to Chamberlain declare war.
How did you feel about that?
Well, as I say, in the previous 9 months, I had virtually was certain that there was going to be a war. And so it was just a question of when it was going to happen. So I was quite prepared for it.
And you say you were then called up?
I was called up, yes, in, I think it was about the 25th of September.
What happened then?
We reported to President, and we were then taken over to King's Cross and put on a train, and we ended up at Butlin's holiday camp at Skegness, which had been taken over by the Navy and named HMS Royal Arthur.
What happened there?
Well, we continued training and for a month, and then there was a batch of us went down to Chatham in October, and from there we were immediately sent on down to Dover, where I was attached to the base, Lynx, HMS Lynx, for duties on Sandhurst, which was the depot ship in the part of the Dover docks, which is now the ferry port, and for duties on minesweepers. And the minesweepers consisted of trawlers which came virtually straight off fishing duties. And so slowly they were modified. And within 6 months of that, or less than 6 months, the drifter that I was attached to, Her Majesty's drifter Hosanna, she was converted to duties for sweeping magnetic mines.
How did they spell Hosanna?
Hosanna.
So it was HMD Hosanna or HMS Hosanna?
HMD, Her Majesty's drifter. Then there was a further drifter I was attached to, which was Thompson's, Thompsons.
What kind of facilities did these vessels have?
What kind of?
Facilities did they have?
Limited. They converted the fish hold into a mess deck, and there were two RN or RNVR ratings aboard, one a torpedoman and the other a signalman. The remainder were ex-fishermen, including the skipper, who was a rank skipper, which is equivalent to a warrant officer. And there were a group of us converted for magnetic mine sweeping, and over the group there was a Lieutenant RNVR in charge.
Where did the crews come from?
Well, the crews were pretty nearly all from Grimsby.
What were they like?
Raw, I think is the right word. Heart of gold. But the interesting thing, as far as I was concerned, was the fact that we were told beforehand that under no circumstances were we to use the word bastard, which is a common term on the mess decks in HM ships. And the reason that we were warned about this was the fact that so many of the fishing, or the fishermen who we might meet on our ships would be in that category, and that could lead to extreme reaction.
Were there any other swear words you were advised not to use?
No, that was the only one. It didn't, I hasten to say, it didn't apply to me, but it was a word that became, it, which was very prevalent on the lower deck in HM ships.
What were they like? What were the crew like as far as seamanship was concerned?
Excellent. I hadn't realised the extreme conditions that fishing could impose upon a human being. There were no loos aboard. There was, if you wanted to relieve yourself, you sat on the side of the ship, and there were no bathing arrangements, there were no toilet arrangements. In fact, it was very primitive. The, as I said, these ships came straight from the fishing grounds to start with. And one of the fishermen who came with them was a chap from Labrador. How he came, I wouldn't know. But one of his pastimes was to eat candles. So if that means anything, it was of interest to me. But the conditions were quite difficult. Living conditions were quite difficult.
Had this crew had experience of North Sea or Iceland? Or
oh, yes.
Distant,
well, no.
Fishing?
Well, most of them were North Sea. But the bigger boats, the bigger trawlers, were ex-Mac Fishery trawlers. What they were called northern boats, Northern Ranger, Northern Rover, Northern this. And one of the interesting facts was that I joined up in the RMBR with a fellow from the same sports club as I was a member, and he was called up slightly before I was. By the RNVR. He was drafted to Northern Rover, as I say, one of the big Mac Fishery boats, which did fishing up off Iceland and so forth. Much bigger boats than drifters. They were really big trawlers. And he was lost in the first month of the war.
Any experience of crews coming from fishing ports other than Grimsby?
Not that I know of. Most of them were from Grimsby.
Can you tell me about the duties that you carried out in Hosanna?
Well, they were purely for the visual signalling during the course of sweeping, because we swept in pairs or whatever it was. And therefore, it was necessary to keep visual contact. There was no RT in those days. Although, having said that, there was no RT, they did, the fishing boats all had RT of their own, which they had before they came, which they had during fishing time. They used during the fishing time. This was used at down at Dover by the shore base to pass coded messages to the ships. And but we had no other RT for ship to ship. That was purely from the Lynx base to to us while we were at sea.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were doing this kind of work?
Well, the first type of anti-magnetic mine sweeping was towing a floating raft, we called it a skid, on which there was a huge, well, huge is the right, a large coil of electric cable which was attached via the towing cable back to a generator in the engine room of the drifter. That set up a magnetic field. Astern of us. We were, of course, degaussed by that time to protect us from the magnetic mines ourselves. And when these mines were set off, there we were some, I don't know, something like 50 yards astern of us. There was this huge explosion which wrecked the wooden skid, and that was it. We'd done our job for the day. We had to go back into port and get another skid, but others carried on with the work. Close to Dover, in the early days of the war, was the downs at Deal, off Deal, where shipping of all foreign nations came and anchored for contraband control. And the Germans were pretty nearly every night would come over and drop magnetic mines in this anchorage. There were a lot of ships which were lost simply because the tide changes quite quickly in the channel and ships at anchor swing round, and whilst they were okay while they were facing in one direction, the tide in one direction, as soon as the tide turned, they are liable to swing round onto a magnetic mine. On one occasion, we had finished our sweeping. We'd had no success, and we came past a Finnish merchantman, and we assumed it was the captain who was screaming his head off for us to take some action. We couldn't understand what he was saying, but we were on our way back to Dover, and the skipper decided that he would do a sweep around this ship. And we did a sweep around this ship, and we set off a magnetic mine right in the spot ahead of him, which, as soon as the tide had turned, would have finished him. So you ask if there were any incidents. Those were the sweeping incidents, but of course they go on for many weeks because I ended up during the Dunkirk evacuation when we were sweeping 24 hours a day in order to preserve the means of ships getting to and from Dunkirk.
In Hosanna?
In Thompson's. I was in Thompson's then.
And were the Germans active during the Dunkirk evacuation laying mines?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, they were continually, every night they were coming over. They would drop them during the night, and we would just go. We'd maintained mine-free channels. By that time, by Dunkirk, we were assisted greatly by a new form of magnetic minesweeping, which was called the double L system, which was carried out by the bigger trawlers towing cables. They were steaming abreast of each other, and the mines would be set off between the electric field between the two cables they were towing. So that was, by that time, more and more double L sweepers were coming in, but at Dunkirk there were not enough to see them through, so we were still struggling along with our skids.
So Thompson's was using the skids?
Yep. Yeah, same as Hosanna.
What did you see of the Dunkirk evacuation itself?
Ships coming in and going out. It was virtually a miracle, in my opinion. It's been used, that word has been used so many times, that I would support it every time.
Did you see any losses?
Any?
Losses. Losses of ships.
I can't say that I did. I saw two ships come, well, Dover was full of half-sinking ships, but I saw no actual losses of ships, because we, as I say, we were in the Dover area, sweeping in that area, and in order that shipping could get back in.
So you were on the English side of the channel?
We didn't go over onto the Dunkirk side. We were not over on the Dunkirk side at all.
Were you attacked by the enemy?
Yes. On occasions we would be never subjected to bombing. We were strafed on one or two occasions. And we had no... We had World War I Lewis guns, but that was all that we had.
What effect did the strafing have on you? What effect did the strafing have on you?
Well, I mean, it on no occasion was the ship hit. If that's any means to you. We were scared stiff.
How did the crew stand up to it?
Very well, very well.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, by that time, it was some 9 months after I had called up. I felt that I could do better for the Navy than just as a signalman. So I put in a request for a commission. And
what rank had you held in Thompson's?
A signalman, that's all. I put in a request for a commission. I, of course, had to give my qualifications, and I was virtually immediately after Dunkirk called into Portsmouth Depot, into Victory Barracks, and along with dozens of others who were specifically hoping for upper deck commissions. But because of my degree in engineering, I was put on one side for a specialist degree commission. I waited in depot for some 3 months. 2 months, not three, 2 months. when I was called to a board at an office outside Victoria Station, where I was interviewed by an admiral and two commanders, commanderees, which was in those days commander brackets E was the engineers. And I had a half an hour interview when I was told that I would be commissioned the following day and that I should make arrangements to get a uniform. I should be commissioned as a probationary temporary sub-lieutenant ERNVR. And I got my uniform very quickly. I came out of the Victory Barracks in my lower deck uniform, and the regulating petty officer on the gate, whom I had seen every time I went in and out of the depot, and I said to him as I went out, "Tomorrow I should be coming in as an officer, and I shall expect a proper salute." Whereupon I got a mouthful, as you can imagine. 2 days later, I did walk in through the depot in uniform. So as I came through the gate, I said to the regulating petty officer, "Morning, regulator." He said, "Good morning, sir." And that was my initial introduction as an officer in 2 days time, 2 days between lower deck rank and an officer.
About what date have we reached now, approximately?
August 1940.
And then?
I stayed in Portsmouth for about a month, during which I and three other officers had an introductory course. I was then sent off. I was then appointed to the Norfolk, and I joined the Norfolk at Tyneside, and when I got there to the jetty, she hadn't arrived. And so I stood on the jetty and waited for her to come in. She was coming in for some repairs and maintenance repairs. And I walked aboard her and reported to the engineer's office, to Commander E. Commander E. Peel, P-I-E-L-E. And he said, "Well, there's no point in you stopping here. You might as well go away and have some leave." So I went off and had a week's leave and then came back and then started to find my way around the ship. And we then we were there for, I think, about a month, less than a month. And then we returned to Scapa, or the ship returned to Scapa from where she'd come. We did some from there. We did several patrols up round Iceland, and about beginning of December, we were issued with tropical kit, and once we'd left Scapa, we were told that we were going to escort the new aircraft carrier Formidable out to the West Indies for trials, and that was it. we'd no sooner got to out to somewhere off Spain when the news came that the Illustrious had got bombed in the Mediterranean, and the panic was on then to